Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday morning. It is the 28th of July. It is very nice to be with you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for joining us this morning. We have a lot to talk about. It was a busy news day yesterday and a lot going on, so we'll get to it in just a moment. I welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We all welcome you to join us, maybe some more than others, but we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Also, let me introduce the group to you so you know who you are talking to and hearing from this morning. We welcome, of course, WAMC's very own Dr. Alan Chartok. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. I'm still coming off of that. Watching the hearings yesterday, I have to say, I have never in my life, and I've watched a lot of television, a lot of hearings, I've never been felt anything was as compelling as those four guys talking about what had happened to them and laying it all out, and the N-word being thrown around by these mobsters. And you know, I think the American people have a much better idea of what this was all about now than they did before.
Absolutely. And it's we'll obviously be talking about that in just a moment. Fran Berman is here. Fran is the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI, faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Fran, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
A delight to have you here as always.
It's delightful
to be here.
What a bet. You are the best, Fran. And when we see you, it's just fabulous.
Director, actor, educator, Kristen Van Genhoven is here, co-founder and artistic director of Wham Theater and our favorite Canadian. Good morning, Kristen. How are you?
I'm doing so well. It's not raining, so that's a plus. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Wonderful to have you, as always. And Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist, adjunct professor at the University at Albany. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Do we have Fran's mic on? Or Rosemary's mic on?
Hmm. Well, I heard her.
We heard? I didn't hear her.
Hello?
I don't think so. Oh, yeah. Okay. We're good. All right. Hi. How are you?
Delighted.
Excellent.
To be here.
Good to hear you.
How's that?
All right. Much better. I hear you all now. We're good. All's good with the world. Okay, so let's begin. We'll talk about what happened yesterday. Of course, we had an abbreviated show because of the hearings that Alan just referenced, and they were very compelling. They were very vivid and disturbing on all fronts. I think that it certainly was a reminder, if less anyone had forgotten, of just how horrible things were on that day, but to hear the officers who were there and their personal experiences was quite riveting. Four police officers told a House committee investigating the Capitol attack that they had been beaten, crushed, and tasered. All of them were telling us that Trump sent us, one officer said. Another described a crowd calling him by a racist slur. Representative Liz Cheney, one of the two Republican members, said the committee should investigate Donald Trump's role. The Justice Department declined to defend a congressional ally of Trump in a lawsuit over the riot. So those are just some of the headlines coming out of the investigation that began yesterday. More hearings expected, I believe, but yesterday was day one. Alan, you said your piece, but anything you'd like to add to it?
Yeah, not much, but I do think that the American people, many of whom, you know, think they know a lot, don't listen all the time. They don't pay attention. And this was just one more reinforcement for the American people about what, how contentious it was and what had happened.
All right. You were the Rosemary, what do you think?
Well, I remain, as you know, really skeptical about this whole process, which I think is misplaced. It should be in the criminal justice system, not in Congress. It was extremely compelling. I'm glad they got a chance to tell their story, but the people who needed to hear it were not listening. McCarthy said he had committee meetings. Jim Jordan said he was busy with lots of congressional work. Elise Stefanik was, I don't know.
Well, she didn't even say.
Obstetrician's appointment, who knows.
She wouldn't tell.
Respond to it. So I still, my main my main takeaway was yay to Nancy Pelosi, who said no to Jim Jordan, because that would have been a completely different proceeding had he been there. It would have been interrupted, that compelling, very moving testimony about putting your life on the line to save the Capitol would have been interrupted with baloney about Black Lives Matter and protests in Portland. And that did not happen because she stood up to McCarthy's bluff. So good for her. If you have to do it, that's the way to do it. But I still feel like it's not the right forum.
But if people are listening and watching,
are they?
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I think. I mean, this sounds flip, but I mean it. You know, I think more people were interested in Simone Biles yesterday than they were in the committee hearings.
I agree.
But, I think anyone who did have contact with that yesterday. Was immediately. It was just hard to not, especially with the video and the testimony and the people who were actually there. It's hard not to be changed in some way by it. Fran,
I was just wondering if anybody had watched, because it was all over the news that I was watching, and you know, you pretty much directly saw the testimony, and you know, from everything I've read, I mean, this is just appalling. You know, I cannot figure out for the life of me how, you know, any of these reactions to this are in the public interest. But I also was
not
reading.
I'm sorry, what do you mean, any of the reactions?
Any of the reactions from the Republican side, you know, like I was too busy. I was getting my nails done. You know what? Okay, I made that one up. But, you know, but that's essentially
what they
said.
I don't know. Maybe check. That may not be the case. It may have actually said that.
Well, we don't know what the numbers are.
It's it's just appalling to me that you wouldn't listen to something that is trying to get at the heart of something incredibly tragic that happened. And it's in the public interest to understand. However, my question to you and maybe to our listeners is, no, I was not reading Breitbart News. You know, I was not listening to conservative media. I'm really curious as to what was said about the proceedings from that point of view.
Well, I think the Republicans are in a bad spot here, and they know it. You know, they've made up a series of lies, an attempt to obfuscate what's going on in these hearings. And they didn't want the hearings. They'll do anything not to have them. But the American people, and not every American, but an awful lot of Americans, were looking at that and seeing these guys and hearing the terrible things that happened to them. They thought they were going to die.
Yeah.
And
some of their fellow officer did die.
And the black policeman who said that they kept yelling the N-word at him. You know, this is something the American people need to know about.
Kristen.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talked about how more people were probably watching the information about Simone Biles, because I think there is strangely a connection, because while I agree with Fran that it's in the wrong venue and it should be in the criminal justice system.
You mean
Rosemary.
That's
Rosemary.
That's okay.
Rosemary.
I'm sorry.
We all
I'm
sound
sorry,
alike.
Rosemary.
You're fine.
We're both short.
I'm calling in. You guys all have the pleasure of being in the same room, but I'm grateful that I could call in today, so thank you for that. But I wanted to share that I think it is really important that there's a venue for all of the officers who are experiencing so much trauma to share their stories. So while the people who are watching it are probably all of us who already think that this is, you know, has been said, is a sham, and that this is the worst attack on democracy, you know, that we all, those of us who are watching, believe that, there is huge value in those folks who were part of it having the forum to share their story. It's such a big part of the healing that they have to do. And I think the same is true for Simone Biles. So there is strangely a connection between the two and the opportunity to share their vulnerability as part of the healing.
Can I add one thing to that? Because I had a similar feeling that when those guys were talking, all four of the officers were amazingly anti-Trump. They said strongly anti-Trump things. He did it. It's his fault, which is not the usual point of view that you hear from men in uniform. Yeah. They might have been people who voted for Trump in an earlier time. And in a way, I thought that would play to Republicans who are saying it's just a witch hunt, it's just a way, a bipartisan attack on him. They sort of played into that, I thought.
Well, I sure disagree with that, of course, and you know that, Rosemary. I think that they were incredibly disarming. I thought that the Republicans would say what you just said, of course, but you know, this was a moment when they were talking about the fear of losing their lives, and they all went out of their way to say that it wasn't political. And by the way, I just want to mm-hmm. respond to you and to Fran on one level. Yes. The Justice Department should investigate this, but will be. But it's not either or. These are people, and I've interviewed many of these congressional people who said they thought they were going to die too, that people were guarding the doors, mm-hmm. and I thought that was, you know,
well, isn't that what makes the hypocrisy of all this? I mean, Kevin McCarthy was one of them too, but he's
and he called the White House.
He called
the White House and he begged Trump to intervene. So
I like the lawsuit that Eric Smallwell has brought in that the Justice Department advanced today against Mo Brooks from Alabama, who he absolutely accused him of inciting a riot. And it's going to proceed to the next level in court. So good. That's the way to handle it.
If this
yeah. congressional hearing could prove that there were members of Congress who helped promote it, opened doors for it, did anything at all to assist that would be worth it. But
We don't know. Well, I mean, those hearings will go on, right?
We'll see.
It also feels really important to have it in the history books, you know, in the future, that this was just like how important it was for January 6th to happen and all these other parts of it. You know, it's so important that this happens just for the structure of government and for reading in the future that this did get spoken about, you know, and it was one of the top items on Fox News, you know, very similar article to the ones that we were reading on the New York Times, the Washington Post. So it is making its way, even if, you know, there's probably millions of people who aren't paying any attention.
Kristen, what was the spin on Fox News? This is Fran.
Interestingly, it was almost exactly the same article as what was in the Washington Post.
Wow.
You know, the headline, the subheading, of course, was against Nancy Pelosi. But when you actually clicked on the article, it was really sharing. It was not holding back from what I could take from it. Because I was curious, like was mentioned, you know, how is the conservative news covering right. this? So I went to Fox News and I was, impressed. I mean, I rolled my eyes at the subheading. But then when I actually clicked on the article, I thought, oh, they are showing empathy for the stories that were shared and they are sharing what was said.
Fox News has never been the problem. It's Fox commentary, and that continues to be just repulsive.
Yeah, Hannity's main thing yesterday was the commission's only goal is to smear Donald Trump.
Exactly, which as I say,
yeah,
even the police officers paid
attention.
Well, it needs to be said that without Rupert Murdoch, Hannity wouldn't have that platform, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In other words, right. Fox News allows that to happen.
Well, he's more than Fox News. He's the Fox Network. And so overall, Fox is the problem. But it's not the news that it has individual articles that are fair and balanced is not surprising.
But it also took them about 2 seconds to take it off the front page to put in about the mask mandates.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was the real issue for them. You know, I'm also curious as to what, when you think about where we are, As this investigation goes forward and more information is brought, I mean, I will say I thought that the presentation was remarkable yesterday. I thought they just did an amazing job. There were some, and I don't have the statistic, I don't even have it close, but like 45,000 hours of tape that they have on this.
Is that right?
Of something of film. They said it on NPR yesterday. From all the different sources, from people's personal cameras to the surveillance to what was taken by the networks and everybody else, which is why different things keep emerging and coming out.
Think about all the lies that have been told about this. The Republicans have said this was the Antifa people, or this was Black Lives Matter people, or this was, you know, and that was all put to rest. That's why I thought that it was a remarkable hearing yesterday.
So, by the way, I mean, like an interesting spin for me is I think we all have strong and perhaps mixed feelings about living in a surveillance state. And this is a positive. Many negatives, but this is a positive because when you have something like this, or when you have something like the Boston Marathon or something like that, and you're really able to garner all of this information, sometimes it's helpful. A lot of times it's really intrusive, but sometimes it's helpful.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversations. We have a lot of letters, so we'll get to those. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Fran Berman, and Kristen Van Genhoven all make up our panel this morning. We do welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. We ask you to keep them short and to the point. We are getting a lot, so we want to get to as many as we possibly can in the time that we have allowed. Panel at WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this news from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Rosemary Armeo, and Kristen Van Genhoven. We welcome your letters panel at WAMC.org. And we have a lot, so let's go. The hearing was informative, but there has been no visible investigation of the financing of those tens of thousands of people who assaulted our Constitution on January 6th. If they don't follow the money, we'll never pin down how it was organized or what was really going on. Haven't we learned anything since Watergate? They need to follow the money. Even during the second impeachment trial, there was nothing about who paid for the buses, the hotels, and everything else.
Now, they say they're going to follow the money. In the interviews that they've had with
Benny Thompson.
They say they're going to follow the money, and we can only hope that they do.
Joe says, if we haven't already, we should posit that Trump had 4 years or more to gather damaging dirt on all the Republicans. It may be they are acting like ostriches with their heads in the ground because he can destroy them.
Well, I think the last part is certainly right. They're doing it because he can destroy them. And he's proven that. Although yesterday we had an interesting election in Texas,
yes,
in which the Trump-endorsed candidate lost. And that offers me, at least, who's always looking for encouragement, some encouragement.
Well, I thought that was funny because he was texting all, or whatever he does now. I get the emails, his statements, and he was making statements all day about the election in Texas and how it was going to prove. And then once the results came out, it's sort of been radio silence.
Yeah. And let's remember, a lot of Democrats voted in that election because the Democrat had been eliminated. So now it was two Republicans,
right.
And Democrats certainly weren't going to vote for the Trump-endorsed candidate.
Let's see. Rudy says, I'm asking the question, not knowing the answer, although I have my opinions. Where have the police unions been in backing their brothers in these hearings? Any statements by the police unions or national police organizations? It seems we are in the middle of crickets in the field. Mm. Anyone know an answer to that?
No. There has been nothing.
That's a really interesting question, though.
That was my point initially, that these are men who normally would have been in the Trump camp, or conventional thinking would put them in the Trump camp, but now they were so virulently anti-Trump in the hearings yesterday. It was quite a change.
Well, I mean...
And reason, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, there's somebody...
there's motivation for that,
you're being killed, you know. Okay.
I love the one comment that one of them said... that I said to them as they were trying to get me, I have children.
Yeah.
I have children.
Well, and I was really struck by the comment of, like, they were seeing lots of folks who had the flags with the blue lines, which shows support for the police, and yet they were showing no respect for the police.
The police, right. You know, the officer saying of what that even as all this was going on, that they were making a mental note that, oh my God, there's a Confederate flag going through the Capitol
right.
at this moment.
Right.
Although, Alan, if you follow your comment, and that struck me too, but it's sort of like, it's like okay to kill people without children, but it's not okay to kill people with children.
Yeah, you're right.
It's like, really?
You're right, of course. You're right, of course, but I thought it was very poignant.
That's standard fare in negotiating with the bad guys, that you try to humanize yourself. You have kids, you know. Please,
a spouse,
I love animals.
Children, right.
Yeah,
I have a cat. His name
I'm going to Disney next week. Let me go.
I couldn't possibly do all these horrible things.
You know,
just
I think
it's kind of not okay to kill people, period. Yeah.
You know, it's very tough to trivialize what was going on there yesterday. I think, you know, these people were all seen as American heroes by, you know, in Kinziger and others and Liz Cheney, who said it was horrible. I really couldn't take my eyes off that television.
Mary says they should subpoena all those Republicans who were hiding under tables and now say it was just tourists at the Capitol. Linda says, I was listening to the proceedings on WAMC on and off all day yesterday. During the testimony of one of the officers, he mentioned that there were 9,000 people storming the Capitol on January 6th. Yeah. I'm wondering if anyone else heard that and if it's true. I've not read anything about the actual number of insurrectionists that were at the Capitol on that day, and I'm not been able to verify that number.
I did hear that and wondered the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was his impression or he had some number.
I think there were thousands.
Yeah.
This is an estimate on the part of law enforcement, by the way, who was there. So I do think that there were a lot of people. And I do know this. What struck me was the estimation that it was only 150 law enforcement people guarding the Capitol, including a lot of people who just showed up because they knew it was the right thing to do, even though they didn't have to come.
My understanding on the numbers, too, is there's a differentiation between the people who, quote, stormed the Capitol, who actually breached the Capitol, and the people who were on the lawn, who
right.
went to the stairs watched. And were scaling the building and that kind of thing.
You just want to make sure that the people who are estimating it are not the people who estimated the number of people at the inauguration.
That's right.
Just
that's
want to
right.
point that
good,
out.
Good point. All right. So thank you for that. Linda, we go to Adam, listening to the officers and feeling sympathetic for them. I cannot help feeling concerned for their stories. We're simultaneously exciting those sympathetic to the terrorists. I could see folks at home saying things like, yeah, let's do it again.
Yep.
I have my Kafka t-shirt on today.
Yes, I see your Kafka t-shirt.
That tells it all.
Yeah, but again, you can't keep that. Like, that can't be a reason for you not to do it.
No.
To have them
certainly
to give their
no.
And
their
to Liz
stories.
Cheney's point, you know, if they don't do it, then that also does open the door for this to happen every January 6th, every 4 years.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Daisy says, I found the testimony riveting yesterday. I somewhat agree with Rosemary in that this will not make any difference to people in their Trump silos, but it might make a difference to that narrow segment of voters who determine our presidential elections.
And as I've said so many times, 5%, if you win by 5% in a presidential election, you can all look this up, that's regarded as a blowout. So, in other words, that 5% becomes very important.
Mary says, yesterday your representative blamed Nancy Pelosi for the January 6th riot. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. I have to put this in context.
Sure.
Mary says, hey, 21st District New York voters. That was the key line. So this is too about Elise Stefanik, not about us. Yesterday, your representative blamed Nancy Pelosi for the January 6th riot. Do you agree or don't you care? And are you still planning to vote for her next year? Good question. We go to Carl. I think that Ms. Armeo, after she listened and or watched the testimony, try it again. I trust that Ms. Armeo, after she listened and or watched the testimony of four law enforcement officers, was appropriately chastened in their cynical view of the process as mere political theater. It may have been theater to Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise and Kevin McCarthy, but not to me and no doubt millions of others who found the searing testimony both moving and terrifying. We go to Annabelle. Who shows up at a rally with bear gas? Who shows up at a rally with Kevlar vests, combat helmets, and gas masks? Premeditated is written all over this wall.
You bet.
Well, and that continues to be such a big question, right? So many people knew that this was a possibility, and yet they were not prepared. That's always been like, what? How is that possible?
Mm-hmm. Where do you think we go from here, Alan?
Well, I think it's terribly important that the American people know exactly what's up. After all, Trump is a lying liar. And the big lie is here. He stood up there and he said, get down to the Capitol, and I'm going with you. Just another lie. And in the end, he is responsible for it. Now, my hope is that the investigations, as Rosemary hopes it happens, in the Justice Department, and as we heard yesterday by the Congress, who are most threatened, this was an attack on democracy. I sure hope something comes of it.
What has Biden said on this, and is it enough?
Well, that's an interesting question, Joe.
He hasn't said anything because he's left this up to Congress. He does not think it's his job. He's working on infrastructure. I think that's a smart move.
And let's remember that this is a guy. And let's remember that this is a guy, Biden, who served in the Senate for a long, long time. I think 40 years. He knows a great deal about this, and he knows that this is something that had never been done before, ever.
I think this is probably like a good thing, as you all have been saying, for history. And so someday when they're teaching the demise of the American democracy, this will be required reading. But for an immediate effect, I just don't see it.
I think Biden's working well with Pelosi, and I think that's how he's... he's talking with her, and then she's carrying the congressional ball as she should.
I mean, his statement was mm-hmm. so strong that he made on the 6 month anniversary of the insurrection, and calling that out, and used incredibly strong language. So I can only assume my question was specifically about the hearings themselves, but I hadn't heard that he had commented in any way. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We have a lot to talk about. Yes, this happened yesterday, but boy, the word of the day is masks. And it seems like every story has something to do with masks. So we will unmask all of that when we come back. We welcome your letters. panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Rosemary Armeo, and Kristen Van Genhoven. We will continue after this break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Let's talk about mask guidelines. A lot of work on this front yesterday. And so the three stories, I'll sort of present them all at one time, and then we can take them apart and do each one separately. But we had the new mask guidelines that were released by the CDC. Then there is the question that the Biden administration is floating about doing a mask mandate for federal workers. And then the CDC came out yesterday on the issue of school masking. So we'll go through all three of those because they are three very separate stories. But the one that we'll start with is the CDC, as infections rise, urging some vaccinated Americans to wear masks again in communities with growing caseloads. Vaccinated and unvaccinated people should return to wearing masks indoors in public areas, according to health officials. Now, interestingly, at least I found this interesting, that in the New York Times coverage of this, the headline is "A Confusing Message." So the CDC recommends indoor masking for the vaccinated, but only in some places. The CDC has both a polarization problem and a communication problem. Let's start with the polarization problem. The parts of the country that would benefit most from a new crackdown on COVID-19, including more frequent mask wearing, are also the places least likely to follow CDC guidance. Many of these communities have been rejecting the advice of medical experts for months on masks and vaccines. Another CDC announcement will not change that. Yet, there are the communities that the CDC is trying to influence the most. In its updated guidance yesterday, the agency did not recommend that all vaccinated people, again, begin wearing masks indoors. The CDC said that only those vaccinated people living, quote, in an area of substantial or high transmission, end quote, should do so and published a map online showing which areas qualify. As you can see, most of the Northeast and Upper Midwest, as well as much of the West, have only moderate or low transmission. If that stays true, vaccinated residents in those places can generally remain unmasked, according to the CDC. It is confusing, Alan.
It's very confusing, and I have to say I want to take a page out of Rosemary's book, who's never afraid to call it like it is, or like she thinks it is anyway, and that is that the CDC has done an awful job here. They're all over their place. I am sure I've said this before, Walensky's a great doctor, but in terms of telling us what to do, because the American people want to know what to do. What should I do? Should I wear a mask? Shouldn't I wear a mask? What I come away with this is I'm wearing a mask. I have one on under my chin right now. I will wear a mask because what harm could it do to protect yourself? So there we are.
That, you know, that's exactly right. I mean, and I will say that we all came in here with masks, you know, because science says there is some possibility, and it's important to be prudent. So science indicates that we're prudent. I will say, you know, to my knowledge, there is like zero downside with wearing a mask. It's not gonna make any difference. And there are a lot of actual and potential upsides. So why not? You know, when you go to a restaurant, you wear a shirt. That's an important thing. You do that for the public good.
Especially when you're a girl.
When you go out of the country, you answer a question about whether you've been on a farm. You do that for the public good. There are things that you do for the public good that have potential good benefits. There's no guarantee that it will benefit you or benefit others, but you do that for the public good. Wearing a mask is like that. I just don't understand why it's become such a political hot potato.
So on that hot potato, officials in some states took the new guidance from federal experts and swiftly ran with it. Others decided to take a wait-and-see approach. What are they waiting for, just out of curiosity?
Death.
And some stood firmly against it. Shortly after the CDC announcement, officials in Illinois and Nevada said they would follow the guidance, asking residents to wear masks in indoor public spaces regardless of vaccination status.
So what are they waiting for? They're waiting for Trump to tell them, you know, this is a bad thing and don't do it because it'll reflect well on Biden.
The harm is done. This is all completely all political, and the CDC is not acting like a scientific medical entity doing good public policy. They're pussyfooting around, making it as least restrictive as possible. I've come away to Alan's thinking that it is the unvaccinated causing the problem. That is clear. The disease is running rampant among them and increasing the danger of new variants that will make a danger to even us,
right,
who have responsibly been vaccinated. And so it's time to put the blame there, stop talking about anybody else but people who are not getting vaccinated, who are not working for the public good, and to demand more of it. So I think Biden saying federal workers have to be vaccinated, good idea. I hope we do the same in schools soon. And hospitals, there are healthcare workers fighting this. That just completely floors me.
There are a lot of healthcare workers.
What the heck? Mm. But anyway, to work in a hospital, I want them all vaccinated. And yes, wear a mask. I mean, again, personal responsibility is a big deal here. I'm going out more than I did during the quarantine days, but I'm still masking.
Kristen, what about you and the arts? Have you done any thinking about masks and that?
Yeah, you know, when I read these articles yesterday, I wrote in huge capital letters, "Arg!"
Yeah.
And, you know, in the last 2 days, literally like 24 hours, 12 hours, we've had so many conversations about the fact that we're likely going to have to pivot again. And I just think because the people who are going to listen to the to this information are all of us, like you all came in with a mask today. So everybody in the Northwest is going to start wearing a mask again, and all of the people in the unvaccinated counties are probably not, you know, and it definitely affects the way that things are going. People are very nervous, starting to become increasingly nervous about going indoors. And, Yeah, it does feel like we're going to have to make some hard decisions sooner rather than later, because regardless, this is only going to get worse, unfortunately, in the next couple of months. I want to believe that it won't be like, you know, where we were last year. And it does seem that an educated guess would be that the next couple of months are going to be challenging. So, yeah, there are lots of conversations happening. And I think it's smart for us, with the knowledge we have now, to make difficult decisions now in order to avoid unnecessary stress and stretching of bandwidth later when we're going to have to pivot.
Rose.
Well, Kristen, here's a oh, I'm so sorry.
No, go ahead.
Kristen, I have a question for you, because I think a lot about the arts too. My daughter runs a ballet studio, a ballet school, and actually I've been taking on Zoom with their classes for the past year and a half, and they've been wonderful. But, you know, taking on Zoom is not the same as being in a studio. And to see how she pivoted was amazing. In the height of things, they restricted the number of people in the studio. At the very height of things, they had no one in the studio except the instructor. They have people wear masks, so when I went out there to visit her, I wore a mask while I was dancing, which is inconvenient, but makes you feel like you're doing something for everyone. They disinfect things. They do a bunch of stuff, but so they've kind of managed through Zoom, but I was thinking about theater and Broadway getting ready to, you know, come back in the fall and
September
all of that.
14th,
and now, you know, doesn't this mean that everybody's going to have plans A, B, C, D, including economic plans A, B, C, D?
Yeah, the problem is that rock in a hard place. I mean, you know, Cuomo and all the others know very well that people have had enough. They don't want any more, you know. And yet, that's too bad. I was going to use an adjective.
Yeah, of course we're all tired of it. But, you know, it's not that, you know, being tired of it doesn't make the pandemic go away.
You know, I know there
are... Right, and the plus side...
Go ahead, Kristen.
I'm sorry, the plus side... Yeah, the plus side is that, you know, after the initial shock last year... Artists are extraordinary problem solvers, and we all have lots of different scenarios, you know, so at least we're coming into this with some knowledge that we gained from last year, you know, and we started with like A, B, C, D, E.
Yeah.
And then we thought we were going to have some relief and be able to go with plan A and B. And now we're realizing, oh, we probably have to revisit plan C and D, not necessarily because we think safety is an issue, but because people in the Northeast mentally are going to be nervous, you know, and so that has to be considered.
So what do you do if you're a politician now and you want to be reelected?
Hopefully you do the right thing.
Yeah, well, we know what the right thing is, but what do you do?
Well, I mean...
I thought that last night, too. I think you have to do what you have to set an example, and you have to make the hard choice. Gavin Newsom, Bill de Blasio, Biden, you have to put masks on and shut things down, and you have to make a really difficult decision that's going to make a lot of people angry, but it's the right thing to do.
He doesn't have to worry. He's leaving. He's term limited.
Yeah, he's turned. You know, turn it over the reins.
Your point, though, is right. We do know a lot more now than we did, and we are able to function and still be safe. There's social distancing. There's masks. You don't have to wash your vegetables and strip your mail of the stamps, taking all those crazy things we were doing.
The rubber gloves, the constant.
Yeah, we can still continue to function. And I think a good politician could make that clear. We can have the economy and we can stay safe. I think there are bigger issues, too, that we haven't even begun to deal with that now would be good to look at. Like, for example, people realize that they like not working and they don't want to go back. States that did away with unemployment benefit, thinking, you know, oh, they'll rush right back because they're not getting paid to stay at home, that baloney conservative idea. They're not going back. People like having time with their family, having time with their kids, and the workplaces have to deal with that. Our economy is going to be changing. A good politician would get ahead of that and start campaigning.
And just remember, Rosemary, if the science indicates in the future, God, I hope not, that you have to start disinfecting your popsicles again, you know, because that's the new information.
Is that a euphemism?
No, sorry. But, you know, if that's the new information, then that's the important... It wasn't like we were wrong.
Yeah.
It's just like we didn't know that yet.
Right.
Well, I want to get into, Rosemary said something that has stuck in my brain, which is this idea of the CDC pussyfooting around. I want to read a paragraph here from the Times and their coverage of this. We'll do all of that on the other side of the break. We welcome your letters on this. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Rosemary Armeo, Kristen Van Genhoven. Ian Pickus is next with news. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Rosemary Armeo, and Kristen Van Genhoven. And we welcome you to the program, and we welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. So this from the New York Times coverage of the CDC announcement yesterday. Much of this reality is beyond the CDC's control. The country was polarized long before COVID, but the CDC has not maximized its chances of being heard either. That's the communication problem. Its announcement of the new guidelines was both vague and technical, making it hard for many non-experts to understand. The agency did not make clear which parts of the country were affected or how that might change in coming days. Instead, officials used the phrase high transmission areas as if it meant something to most Americans. President Biden, in a public statement, referred to areas covered by the CDC guidance, leaving listeners to guess what they were. The White House added to the confusion late yesterday by sending an email to staff members telling them they would again need to wear masks. The email explained that the CDC had recently upgraded Washington, D.C. to having substantial transmission from moderate. However, the online CDC map, which was also distributed with the email, still showed the city as yellow, meaning it only had modest transmission. All of which raises a question. Should Americans assume that the new mask guidelines will soon apply to almost the entire country, or will remain highly regional, focused on the South and other less vaccinated regions?
Well, I have a comment about this. First of all, you have a data problem and a communication problem. The communication problem, of course, the CDC has to sort of figure out how to communicate clearly, directly, and to dance around the political minefield that it finds itself in. And that's hard, and I have no advice for that. But the data problem is a lot of this data is hard to get. There isn't sort of one way of collecting the data everywhere, and there isn't one group that collects the data. When you get the data, you might have data from yesterday in one place and data from last week or last month in another place. And so getting kind of a holistic picture of it all is very difficult. And so, you know, if our maps are not, you know, kind of up to speed everywhere and using the same models to get the same kind of data, it's not so surprising. And it's a problem we have sort of throughout science often. This is why common standards are useful. This is why scientists think about things like that.
But how do you how come in a year the CDC couldn't demand the same information from every reporting agency to it? A year and a half now it's been.
Well, it can demand the same kind of information, and then you have to figure out how is that going to be collected. So think about something like a death from COVID. If they're in the hospital with a diagnosis of COVID and they die, that's a death from COVID. If they did not have a diagnosis of COVID, if they were not tested, if they were not in the hospital, it's hard to get that kind of information. If, you know, one jurisdiction has one group collecting that data and another jurisdiction has a different group collecting that data.
But the baseline, Fran, is still people who did die in the hospital because they were there for COVID, and that would be enough to make decisions about masking.
Right.
It's not ideal data collection, but it's not as messed up as you've presented. It is not I don't see this as a data problem. I see this as they know what should be done, and they're being very precise and making it as unrestrictive as possible, and that is causing the issue because it's confusing and it changes.
They have kind of three problems. They have a data problem, I think, is getting, you know, exact data, which is very hard to get and sometimes impossible. They have a communications problem, but they also have a policy and a politics problem. You know, they have to figure out what they can recommend that is scientifically legit, but also politically palatable. You know, I have no idea, Rosemary, how to solve those problems. But I do think it's a multifaceted set of problems.
I think what's her name, Jen Psaki from I can never say her name. Yeah, the spokeswoman for the White House needs to go over there and work with these guys. This is it's been a problem from the very beginning when Dr. Walensky goes to Congress and goes, "Oh, we absolutely have to keep wearing masks. It's a problem." And then 2 days later, she's saying, "Oh, we don't have to have masks anymore."
Well, I mean,
and she had data to support it, but you don't make abrupt changes in policy like that. It's just so common sense from a communications point of view.
Well, and worse than that. I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I'm sorry, I just had a board fall on me, so.
I did not throw the board.
No, I know. To say before, as my mother would say, in front of God and everybody, that I'm concerned about impending doom.
Yeah, she said that.
Impending doom. Yeah. And then 3 weeks later, okay, everybody, you can take your masks off.
Yeah,
we're all good.
Fine. We're
Show's
fine.
Over. Keep going. Go back to your normal life.
You're absolutely right.
The messaging has been nothing but confusing and wig-wagging. And I'm sure, I'm really sure it's based on data because that's how data works. Things change.
Right.
But you cannot use that as the basis of your communication with what's safe policy.
Well, there's three things. They have to figure out what the data can tell them, and the data is imperfect. They have to figure out what policy is going to be scientifically legitimate and work with in the political environment of the country. And then they have to find a really great way to communicate it.
Right.
So.
And, you know, those things are
that's
hard.
That's a lot.
Meanwhile,
as
if the CDC didn't have enough going on yesterday, they changed their course on school guidance, advising everyone to wear masks. Yay. So the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Tuesday changed its guidance for schools, recommending everyone over the age of 2 and not just the unvaccinated wear masks inside school buildings, a shift that comes in response to rising concerns about the Delta variant of the coronavirus. Alan, when we were talking to Dr. Fagan, our panelist and a pediatric immunologist on Monday, he said that this was the recommendation of the American Association of Pediatrics, and he assumed that this would be something that would be followed by the CDC. So now it is. Now, it's up to the schools as to whether they're going to implement this or not. And this comes, you know, tick-tock, but this comes in most cases 2 or 3 weeks before schools open. They're weighing how to mitigate the spread of the new variant in classrooms and hallways, a question that has been fiercely debated in school board meetings where some parents have flung obscenities at school leaders and state houses. In many places, politics, not science, is guiding how leaders respond, and the guidance might make little difference for schools in 9 Republican-led states that have outright barred them from enacting mask requirements. So this brings us to the other issue, which is a topic that we talked about earlier in the week, where there are legislative measures being taken to make sure that communities cannot put such mask mandates in place in communities, including in schools.
So sooner or later, these people who are saying no masks in schools are going to be held responsible. And I think the Democrats and the congressional people understand that. But more so, the Republicans understand it because you see people like Mitch McConnell and others changing their tune now. And you see Republican governors saying, wear the mask, take the vaccine, do that stuff, because they see the train coming down the track. It's really quite simple. Couldn't anybody tell me why kids, my grandchildren are real cute in them, but why kids shouldn't wear masks?
I know.
They don't mind.
Those
right?
sign unmask our children that are on lawns
all over
our area. Oh my God. Yeah. Like
well,
you say, my granddaughter has like 23 of them. It's a fashion accessory. And why not make it like fun and interesting to do it? Instead we're playing with their lives and their health. It's unconscionable.
It's gonna save lives by masking.
And there is no downside to wearing a mask. Wear a mask.
There isn't, and the other thing too is and I don't know why this so often gets lost in the discussion, and of course it doesn't really, but it is such a part of it, is that anyone 12 and under can't get vaccinated. So
you're putting
the mask away or saying that you don't have to wear a mask for these kids and putting them on the same school bus as older kids who are vaccinated. I don't know. It's or may not be vaccinated because you don't know then. You know, then what do you do? Kristen? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, please, Kristen.
Yeah,
there seems to be something inherently detrimental about scientists having to find a way to be politically palatable. It doesn't seem like there's going to be a positive ending to that. And when I think about the countries that are not having to do that, where the scientists are able to be the scientists and share the data and not have to waggle around and try to figure out how to be palatable politically, those countries are doing better, you know.
Is there really any such place, Kristen? I mean, public health, that's what it is. It's figuring out what the public needs and how to get them to do it. That it is a two-part. It's not like basic science.
It is. I think there's a difference between, I want to believe there's a difference between scientists having to figure out how to communicate to the public how to do things and scientists having to find this sweet spot between, you know, in America, it seems like, I wonder how much the CDC is having to think about the different political parties and how much that's influencing. You know, they've had to walk this tightrope since the beginning. You know, we've seen that with Deborah Birx and all of the different, you know, right from the beginning. Of course, I'm going to be thinking about Canada. I'm going to be thinking about how there's got its own issues. I'm not like blind to the things that aren't going well there either. And yet there does seem to be a difference in how the science is being communicated and how the public is receiving the news from the scientists.
Kristen, you know? I love your comments. But what the thing that I think about when you talk about is, you know, in my memory, which is not all that great, you know, the CDC has been a pretty geeky scientific agency until the last administration. Mm-hmm. When they were just slammed, and my curiosity is that, you know, they're probably still gun shy, and still wanting to kind of work things out so that their message isn't just the regular old, you know, pre last couple of administrations, you know, geeky scientific message, but that they can do that in a way that they're just not going to get slammed again. I don't know. I mean, that's my thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with you, Fran. I do have to say that there's an incredible book out by Michael Lewis, who did Liar's Poker and Moneyball and Blindside and all of those, but wrote a book whose
those are great books
title I can't think. I think it's Premonition.
Huh.
The Premonition. And but in that he talks to a lot of career scientists and people that talk about that there really was never a completely golden age of the CDC.
there have been inherent
issues from the very beginning, and many of the scientists that have worked with that agency for 30, 40 years, or I shouldn't say work with them, not for them, have said, look, they're really good, really, really good at writing reports. They're really, really good at putting information out and saying, this is what happened. They are woeful when it comes to this is what is happening.
This is certainly true right now.
Yes.
Well, and remember, there are multiple. So, for example, if you want research done, you kind of focus on what's happening at the NIH, the National Institutes of Health.
Right.
The focus of the CDC is public health. And so, in some sense, you know, predicting public health is really hard. Telling you kind of what's happening now is a little easier. Telling you what's happened in the past is the easiest.
And I certainly don't want my comments to in any way contradict what you all were saying about the failure of the last administration when it comes to the CDC, but also with the WHO and how that information was released and kind of saturated by all of us. Let's go to letters. Noe says, I share everyone's frustration with the CDC's wishy-washy policies. However, we must remember that they were kneecapped by the previous administration, and the intellectual and moral resolve were beaten out of them, driving people away. They need a fresh infusion of funding and personnel stat.
Well, they did get a new leader.
They got a new leader, right. So. Rich says, an article in the New York Times a few months ago spoke to the stronger immune response to COVID in people who had COVID and then became fully vaccinated. I do not want to get COVID. I am fully vaccinated and will wear a mask in situations that make sense. However, is it possible that people who are getting these breakthrough cases will have that stronger immune response, particularly for the next variant that comes around? Should I secretly hope to get COVID?
I hope our science community figures that out soon.
That's an interesting question. I'm curious about that too.
Yeah, it's a very good question. Yeah. Mike says the one truth that covers everything being discussed is this: America may just be too stupid for democracy. We can find solutions for every problem. If the average citizen can't understand the solution or won't make even the most trivial sacrifice to implement the solution, then democracy is not a form of government that can work here.
Well, say it isn't so.
Oh, well, there's someone more pessimistic than I am.
Yeah, but it's right. I mean,
yeah, I know.
The writer is right. We know that you can't have an informed public who is going to vote people in or out of office if they don't know anything.
How are we supposed to have nice things if you keep screwing around with them? So I'm going to take them away, democracy. Gigi writes, why is the panel so surprised at healthcare workers not getting vaccinated? Have you not noticed that nurses rather than doctors have a higher incidence of smokers among them? The same is true of elementary school teachers compared to university professors. I don't presume to know why this is, stress of their lifestyles, work cultures, etc., but that they are vaccinating at a lower rate is not a surprise.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. You would think that someone who certainly sees the ravaging effects of COVID, number one. Number two, you would assume has some reverence for science and medicine because that's the field that they are in, would be interested.
Let me give you a possibility.
I don't understand either.
Possibility.
Yes.
Although I don't know that this is so. There's an economic differential, right, between doctors and nurses.
Right.
And so the doctors are doing better than nurses are not. Is it possible, on some level, either knowing or unknowing, that this is a political statement?
Meaning
we're not going to put this.
Alan and I just commuted a sentence by shrugging our shoulders. But no, that it's not good. And what's good for you, like I can do better than that.
No, I'm thinking doctors make more money than nurses. Nurses have traditionally and correctly been angry that they don't get enough.
Right.
There are many manifestations that people will do, show their anger. And one of them is saying, I'm not going to wear that mask.
I'm not going to listen to them.
Yeah.
Nate says we keep saying to follow the science, but what is this latest mask recommendation based on? Unpublished information? Does the general public get to see this evidence? And how does a vaccinated person have the same amount of virus in their system than someone who does not have a natural defense against the virus? It's time for the unvaccinated to pay for their own hospital bills.
Okay, I have one thing I want to say about a government and this, and that is, where is the FDC? Why are these vaccines still not approved? They're still being used on a part-time, right? An emergency basis. Mm. That's the aside from politics. That's the number one excuse given by people, including nurses and doctors and healthcare workers, for not getting vaccinated. So, what's the FDC doing on this? The New York Times editorials were asking about this like 2 weeks ago.
Is there a timing issue for? I mean, this I don't know. Yeah. That's the short answer. But is there a timing issue for the kinds of studies that need to be done?
I don't know.
I know. Correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, but I believe the president spoke about this at the town hall last week and said that it was expected to be approved
by August, by the end of August
or early September.
See, that would make a big difference, a big announcement.
Absolutely.
With the CDC and the FDA saying these drugs are safe, get them, they'll save your lives. That would make a difference, and it would eliminate at least one of the major excuses. I don't know what you do about Trumpism.
Yeah, I do wonder if that would make a difference for the nurses in the conversation we were having. It also makes me wonder, I think about, I'm curious about the research of the folks who are nurses or healthcare aides or who are choosing not to be vaccinated and what their historical background is in terms of the communities they come from and how those communities have been treated. We've heard a lot about people with hesitation around vaccinations because of past traumas to their communities. So it does make me wonder how many of our nurses and healthcare workers who are choosing not to be vaccinated are part of those communities and have those same valid concerns that they're grappling with, you know?
Let's see. We'll go back to some letters here. And we welcome yours, by the way. We have a few more minutes before we go over to the break. And then when we come back, we'll move on to other subjects. Jackie says, of course, I agree with the panel that masks should be worn in schools as long as there is a threat of COVID. But of course, there are negatives to this. Kids who are trying to learn to speak a second language are not going to get great instruction. Band and chorus can't happen at all, and this is for kids who've already gone a year and a half with compromised education. It doesn't help to just call masks fun fashion accessories. They do impede education. I mean, so does Zoom learning at home.
I think people are being, I mean, I really appreciate that, but I think people are being creative. And all of the digital media that we used over the last year, people have learned that for, you know, instruction of a musical instrument or for ways of coming together or in various performance ways. So, I think that's a really interesting comment, but I do think this is a place where a little creativity, you know, can be a stopgap.
Well, you're right. You're right, of course. The problem is one of those, you know, tough nuggies thing. We're in the middle of a pandemic.
Right.
There's no two ways back.
Right.
Is it
ideal? No. But the alternative.
Yeah.
Right. I have a 16-year-old niece in Florida who's about to go into grade 11 who's like, I don't want to go back. I don't want to go into school where one in five people are having COVID in this state. But at the moment, she doesn't have an option to learn at home anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that is hard. And as these numbers increase, is that going to change on a dime like it did last year?
Exactly.
And I think that's a big concern, not only for the students, but for the people who are teaching those classes.
You know, all these teachers have been told, back into the classroom now, kids back in the classroom, teachers back in the classroom. And then there's an intervening variable, as the political scientists and others say, and then everything changes.
Well,
it gets back to the modeling, because at some point, the probability of being in the classroom and getting the disease is too high.
Yep.
And so then everything goes back online, or a lot of stuff goes back online, or goes back, you know, partially online with some, you know, crazy alternative schedule. And you know, it's all based on the prevalence of the disease at the time.
And people are getting intellectual whiplash as a result of this.
It's super
well
hard.
and mental health whiplash. You know, what's being done about that?
Yeah,
and it's really hard to figure it all out and to know what's right, what is wrong, and just even the divisions in an individual household of what people are comfortable with of going out when you don't have, you know, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, my wife and I argue about this all the time of where you should wear a mask and where you shouldn't wear a mask, or where we should go or where we shouldn't go. And you're not talking about things that are not allowed to happen. They're all allowed to happen. The question is, do you trust them? And in a lot of cases, you can't or don't want to. Let's take a break.
I was just going to say, we underestimate the mental strain that's putting on all of us to even just be having those conversations like you're having with your wife.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, having a conversation with Kelly is always fun. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. We're talking about masks today, and we got a lot of letters, so I'm going to keep with this and get to as many as we possibly can. John says the CDC recommendation for the vaccinated to wear masks is really a demand that the vaccinated step up to protect the unvaccinated. In other words, those of us willing to be vaccinated for the common good are being asked to protect those who assert their right to ignore the common good. If it weren't for the danger of more deadly variants evolving and the strain another surge will put on our healthcare workers, the evil side of me wishes we'd just let Darwinism play itself out. If people don't care about the country or themselves, why not let the gene pool be trimmed? Who knows? It may change the results of the next presidential election.
Good letter.
That from John.
Yeah, John. You go, man.
John.
Getting bitter today. Janet writes, been in a hospital twice in the last 6 months. Majority of nurses who attended to me were Trumpsters through and through and didn't believe in vaccinations, mostly because they hadn't been approved. Also, CNN showed clips this morning of Fox News people saying police who testified yesterday were actors. We go to Janet, I'm sorry, we go to Anita, Dr. Paul Offit on Morning Joe this morning explained the full FDA approval includes approving all the facilities that make the vaccine, et cetera,
right,
and usually takes several years. The process is being streamlined, but probably won't conclude until September. It would be great if some people, maybe Biden and McConnell together, could clearly explain to people that the vaccines are no longer experimental, that FDA approval is a sure thing, and that the delay is not about the safety of the vaccine.
Okay, so I reject this explanation.
Making
vaccines normally takes many more years than it did this time, but the government threw resources and people and priority at it, and it speeded it up the process. Why could not the same thing be done with approving? So you have to approve all the facilities. Go out there, send out inspectors, and do it. There's unlimited money in the U.S. government to do this sort of thing. It's the top government priority. To say it takes time and just try to reassure people, oh, it's coming, that's why we're in the problem we're in now, Parley.
Fran?
Well, I mean, I loved that letter, and I thought there's a real distinction between saying the vaccine itself is safe and the ingredients and the places that we make it need to be inspected or need to be certified in some way. I think that really helps people understand that the people who have the vaccine in their arm, you know, that's essentially an approved vaccine, and we're going to make sure that, you know, all of the ecosystem around that vaccine being made is good.
We got this from Mike, who says, over a year ago, I wrote saying that we should use this opportunity to rethink how education takes place. Instead, it is a blind rush back to do things the same as before. Very few lessons learned by school administrators, sure, teachers, and state departments of education. If you can successfully teach dance remotely, as Fran was mentioning and as Jacob's Pillow has done, mm-hmm, it seems some other subjects should be easier.
Yeah, I have to point out that I did not pay. This was Mike.
Yes.
I did not pay Mike to write this letter, but I have an op-ed in Inside Higher Ed this week, and it's on, you know, education for a post-pandemic world and the importance of really understanding the digital ecosystem that we're in and all of the implications, privacy and cybersecurity, mm-hmm, and, you know, all of the stuff that's happening with Instagram right now and children and the fact that this is part of the general ed requirement for the 21st century. And and it's incredibly important that people understand the world they're into. You don't have to be able to reprogram the, you know, operating system of your iPhone, but you do need to know what data privacy and net neutrality and cybersecurity, mm-hmm, is.
M writes, I wonder how many people that do not want to get vaccinated continue to smoke or eat gobs of red meat. I guess that's just a general question. I don't have an answer for that. Barbara says, as a retired nurse, I am also baffled regarding nurses not being vaccinated. However, I was equally baffled upon learning how many of my coworkers are Trump supporters. They are rejecting all we learned in nursing school. Darren says, morning, Joe. I think we talked about that. Marta,
you got a ton of letters on nurses, Joe.
Yeah.
Some saying there's a big difference between RNs and
LPNs and their education requirements.
Right, and the other comorbidities that some nurses commit, you know, overweight and stuff like that. But we want to make sure that we appreciate our nurses because they are the hardest workers in any hospital you go to.
Yep.
Underpaid, too. Let's see. Marta says it's really simple. You got to work from home. You got to go to school online until we figure this all out, I guess. Susan says, is there some kind of coincidence that, again, this is a good one. Ready for this, folks? Susan says, is there some kind of coincidence that, again, Dr. Walensky once more had a new pronouncement on COVID restrictions that occurred on the same day that the hearing began on the January 6th insurrection? A perfect distraction on masking instead of focusing on January 6th. I completely agree. CDC has a messaging problem. Walensky must go. I find this letter interesting. I don't know that I agree with it. I don't think I do. But I will say that if the shoe were on the other foot, we would probably be questioning that, wouldn't we?
She's got a history of just blurting it out when she feels the data has changed. We've already talked about her appearance in Congress, and then 2 days later she completely reverses herself. I think the problem is that she is a pure scientist. She's a medical doctor, and she believes that's enough, and it is not, because her job now is it's political and it's policy, and she does not have that communication down.
I agree with that, and I think the letter writer may be right. Maybe
time to go.
Maybe it's time to go. Look, we think she's bright and all of that, but you know, you got to be a communications expert, and I think Rosemary has it right on the nose.
I think that's extreme because she has to. I mean, the medical knowledge is really important, but it's definitely time to, you know, get the communication act together, because that's really important for the her success.
I said
probably
this
just
before.
Need different people around her.
Right, there you go.
Yeah.
Why can't there be personnel changes in our communications department?
And be a part of the,
right.
Somebody writing a better script.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Alan has to go do another show, so Alan is walking out, but don't worry, he's with us in spirit. but thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Joe.
All right. We go to Suzanne, who says, yesterday, Dr. Fauci said that a couple of months ago, the viral count in noses and throats of vaccinated and infected people under the old version of the virus was low. But since Delta has taken hold, vaccinated people who've been infected don't get very sick themselves, but their ability to transmit the disease is as high as unvaccinated people. Doesn't that make a difference?
Right.
I was listening to Dr. Fauci talk about the viral load in your nose, and I...
Ugh.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, and it's...
I hope you weren't eating, Joe.
No, I'm fine with it. Ever since my niece decided that she was going to become a forensic scientist, like, I used to be really, like, I was not a person that liked blood or anything. But then, like, when she was
now
in high school and we were watching, like, the autopsies and that kind of thing, you watch those videos, I'm fine with it now. I'm okay. I'm okay.
Don't show me that stuff.
Every once in a while, I'll just get a picture from her and she goes, look, a spleen. I was like, oh, that's cool. Put it on your screensaver. Karen says the development of mRNA technology has been happening for several decades. This vaccine was produced quickly, but also because the technology has already been perfected and the COVID-19 DNA just had to be mapped and plugged into existing technology.
That's right. And in fact, there's a real movement to kind of get ahead of the next pandemic and to start preparing a number of kind of I don't know what you call it, you know, vaccine sort of templates that can be applied to, I just made up that word, it's not right, that can be applied to, you know, the next disease, and you know, that's like one of the amazing and wonderful things about science, you know, that you can kind of get ahead of things a bit.
Okay, so that goes back to the point I was trying to make before, that the hard part is done. We've conquered that. So why is approval still taking several years? You can't speed up inspection. We know what we're looking for. We know what the standards are. You just need more people to go out and inspect. The approval should not be taking longer than the development of the vaccine.
I mean, I have less knowledge about that. I think that it's a multi, and I'm not defending it by any way, but I do think it's like a multi part process. You know, some things when you throw more people at it will solve the problem. Some people you actually need some more knowledge. Some people you need more time. Sometimes you need more money. I just don't know what the...
Or maybe it's just time.
Yeah, you know, what the issues are.
It might just be time, Fran, that you need a certain amount of time for this vaccine to be circulated to look for effects. It could be that as well, too.
Yeah, I don't know.
And this is a... Go ahead, Kristen.
The hopeful part is, you know, based on the information that one of the letter writers shared, is that when it is approved, hopefully we will see an uptick in nurses and healthcare workers getting the vaccine.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I did an interview with Christopher Cox, who is an editor with the New York Times Magazine and has written a book called The Deadline Effect, and looking at deadlines in all, not just journalism, but in all quarters of life. And one of the things that he said was actually a bad example of the deadline. He uses the deadline effect actually as a positive, not that it you know, people wait to the last minute and then the work comes out shoddy and not good, but that it can be harnessed for a good product. But one of the examples that he used going back pre-COVID was the FDA and the fact that in previous administrations of changing the FDA and moving things up, this is prior to Operation Warp Speed, that the a lot of the testing that was done was being done on the ground and as it was happening, as we're seeing now. And I don't know. I agree with you, Rosemary. I just don't know. Is that the other side of it, too, like that we all become guinea pigs? And we don't necessarily want that
no,
either.
Don't no, want that. No, definitely not.
No.
All right. Let's see. We have 2 minutes, so I think I have time for probably two letters. We go to Kathy. I'm quite frightened by the surge of cases in Warren County. I'm just going to start imploring my Trump-supporting anti-vaxxer neighbors to get the Trump vaccine. Do you think it will work? I wish you much luck. I work at a restaurant in Saratoga, and I'm concerned that summer tourism will cause COVID infection rates to skyrocket as they did in Provincetown. We are already seeing rising numbers in Saratoga County, as the previous letter writer noticed also in Warren County. If downtown businesses would require proof of vaccination, perhaps we could encourage more people to get the shot. But some people would be angry and not visit, but they can take their vaccination in the Ozarks. The responsible people would be safer, and vaccinated people shouldn't be put at risk because of the unvaccinated. Let's see. Leslie, another problem is that the contact tracing has been, for the most part, dismantled. Boy, I'm with Leslie on this one. This is...
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a system anymore.
It's impossible now. It's impossible.
But it shouldn't be. If you have a breakthrough case, you go to an event and there's 25 people in there, and one person has a breakthrough case, there is no mechanism anymore to notify the other 24 people in that room that that person has COVID.
Joe, were you talking about the digital, the exposure notification thing that's on people's phones, or are you talking about some other form of contact tracing?
I'm talking about the contact tracing that used to be done by the county health departments.
Okay.
But both, really. I mean, both. But certainly, I never found the online version to be... I found that to be very... I mean, you had to sign up for it, and
the problem is there wasn't enough people on it.
Right, on it. And you never get a ping. Like, I was walking by people I knew had it, and I'm like, well, come on.
Well, but if they're not signed up and they don't declare, then you don't get it.
All right. We're out of time. But thank you very much, everyone, for being with us. It's always wonderful to have you aboard. We'll be back tomorrow for another enlightening conversation, I am sure. These issues are not going away anytime soon. Fran Berman, always good to see you. Thank you very much.
Have a great day, everyone.
Kristen Van Genhoven, wonderful to have you back on the program. Rosemary, thank you as always. Alan will be back tomorrow, of course. We'll be back right after this.